Intrepid Radio. This is Control. We are go for an on-air check.
Control, Intrepid. We copy an on-air check.
Intrepid, this is Control. You are go for Intrepid Radio. Cue music and cue talent. Intrepid, you are live in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Intrepid Radio, you are live and the clock is running. You are listening to Intrepid Radio, where we spotlight innovators defining the new rules of marketing, business, politics, and life. And now, here's your host, Todd Schnick.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Intrepid Radio. I am your host, Todd Schnick, joined by a past guest who I'm excited to welcome back. Say hello to Ben Settle, who is an email specialist out of bensettle.com. Welcome back, Ben. How are you?
I am doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I appreciate you making the time to come back. I've been on a real big kick recently with a lot of my clients who I think have just are largely executing a rather unsubstantial and relatively piss poor email marketing strategy. So I've been on a real kick trying to get them fired up to do more. So I'm excited to have you back and to continue dialogue. And I had Jason Falls on the show last week, and you're probably aware that he and DJ Waldo got a new book coming out. So I've been bringing a lot of guys that have something to say about email onto the show. So thanks for, again, making the time to do it. Before I get into it, Ben, do take a quick sec and tell the audience a little about you and your background.
Well, the short version is I've been in business, what I'm doing as far as direct response marketing, since the late or early 2000s, like 2002. I got into business originally in network marketing in the late 90s and sucked really bad at that, so I had to find something else to do. Started out in direct response marketing doing copywriting, freelance copywriting, which is just writing ads, advertisements for other people. And then about 4 years ago, I started to specialize in email marketing. Since come to realize, at least in my case and in the case of a lot of other people, that if you get the email part down right, you could probably write a crappy ad and you'll still make lots of sales.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. And there's a lot of crappy stuff on email that frankly I suspect works or they wouldn't continue to do it, which proves a bigger point. And I'm not going to ask you the stupid question that people like me often probably ask you, is email dead? A lot of people say email is dead, and when we know, in fact, that it's not. So it's not even wasting any time going into that. But I do think a lot of organizations do it wrong. And you know, I mentioned that, you know, Jason Falls, who's a co-author of a new book on email marketing, I think it's called The Rebel's Guide to Email Marketing, but their whole shtick is break the rules. And, you know, if you've been following you for a long time, I don't know if you necessarily say break the rules, but a lot of your approaches are very unorthodox. So why does that positioning sometimes help you with email marketing?
Well, you know, when you mentioned breaking rules, I don't really break rules as much as I just create my own rules.
Nice.
And I think that apply. I think people should do that in any type of niche or business you're in, because that's where the innovation happens, and that's where big things start to happen. And yeah, you'll make mistakes and you'll have failures, but once you break through some new ideas and ways of doing things, you might find that everything changes and that people start considering what you're doing to be the new rules. So I don't know if that helps or not, but that's kind of the way I look at it.
Well, I like that phrasing. You know, waited too long in our last conversation to broach this subject, and I want to start off with it today because I think it's really important. And it's the biggest hurdle I overcome when I talked to an organization who is doing an email campaign, and it's, you profess that it is wise to send email every day. And when I mention that to a lot of organizations, and let's just be honest, a lot of the organizations I'm referencing when I say that are larger, more corporate, more your traditional type of big organization that has the traditional org chart. And they bristle at that idea. They say, oh my gosh, that our audience would never accept a daily email. Talk about why sending email with that kind of frequency is so important.
Well, the big reason that they probably shouldn't do it if they don't know what they're doing. So in a way, they're right. But if you know what you're doing, it's extremely powerful, because what it does is it positions you as the only person to buy from eventually. A lot of people are procrastinators. They want to buy from somebody. They're going to buy from somebody eventually. I mean, if you look at it this way, that they have money in their pocket, they have a problem, they're going to pay money to solve it, who are they going to pick? The person who is so timid and scared of their own shadow to send emails that they only email once a month or when they have something to say or whatever the excuse is? Or the person who's there every single day with something interesting to say, something unique to say that gives a new spin on things, that makes people think differently and that inspires them, whatever problem they're trying to fix? I mean, who are they going to buy from? They're going to buy from the person who's there. They're going to buy from the person who's positioned as a leader and not just a, you know, another business out there.
Well, I think the problem is not this belief that they have that, oh my gosh, daily email is bad, bad, bad. What I think the problem is, and you may or may not agree with me, is, you know, the key point to what you said is, if you know what you're doing and you put out interesting and helpful and appropriate content. And I think what people are saying, for the most part, when they say daily email is just too much, is what they're really saying is, I don't have the ability, or I don't think I have the ability to generate meaningful content that frequently. Is that really what they're saying?
I think there's a lot of that to it, and that's a problem they really need to get over, because they, chances are, if somebody is, for example, a salesperson for a big organization, and let's just off the top of my head, let's say a car dealership, they have multiple salespeople, and they're all pretty autonomous in how they can go about doing things, as far as I understand. They probably have a much deeper knowledge base on cars and what's going to go for what family and what's going to work best for one individual over another and that sort of thing than they realize. And if they just draw upon this deep knowledge that they have, that they talk about every day and that they probably spend a lot of their time thinking about anyway, they might be surprised at how easy it would be to just talk about it. I mean, it is no different than when they go talk to their buddies about the work, you know, or talk shop with somebody. That's all you're doing. You're talking shop with your list, and you're giving them the confidence that you're the person to buy from because you know your stuff.
I think the mentality, let's go with your car salesman concept for a minute. I think what's been browbeaten into their head from corporate marketing department is, you got to put out emails about car product with the latest specs and available colors and the this and the that. Yeah, I don't want that in my inbox every day. I mean, I really don't. If I need those kind of specs, I can go to the website, hopefully, and find it. What that guy ought to understand is that there's little helpful tips that he can put out there every day. It doesn't have to be about the model, the latest model car per se, but it can be how to manage your tire pressure issue, what's the right kind of gas you ought to be looking at for your car, and frankly over the course of any given day in that dealership, they're asked a dozen questions by customers or potential customers, saying, well, how does the windshield wipers work, how does this work, how does that, what should I be looking for when I'm doing this, and what? That's all email fodder for a daily email, is it not?
Oh, gosh, all that stuff is. In fact, I'd even take it, if I was selling cars, I would even take it to another level, and I'd throw in every now and then, like, how to get out of speeding tickets and things like that. I mean, just to make it fun and interesting, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, who are you going to buy from after a while? When you're looking for a car, you're going to go to that guy or that girl who's constantly in your inbox giving you this interesting adventure every day.
It doesn't have to be a 1,500-word email either, right? It can be a short few paragraphs of something humorous. That's a great example, Ben, and that is the Ben Settle way of talking about how to get out of a speeding ticket. That's a really key point. I hope people understand how to apply that in their respective space. You know, talk about content. You know, I asked Jason Falls last week. I said, the content issue. Hopefully the audience understands the value of emailing with much more frequency than they're currently doing. But what do you put out there? I mean, I'll be perfectly honest with you. I'm not emailing every day, but I'm emailing several days a week, probably 4 days a week. And I've not seen any noticeable drop in any unsubscribes. So I've gotten over that fear. But what I am doing, Ben, is that when I publish a blog post, I'm also using that same content as an email. And I'm curious as to what you think on that. I guess the question should be, is that okay? Should you put one piece of content on a blog and a fresh set of material on an email list, or is it some combination of both?
Well, that's a good question. Personally, what I like to do, and there's many ways to do this. There's no one size fits all, but I always write my email and then I put it on my blog because in my way of thinking, and I have yet to have anybody really dispute me on this in a way that makes sense, other than just kind of like, you know, parroting some guru or something. The whole point of a blog, and this, people feel free to disagree with me, but I'm right about this, is to build a list. I mean, that's the whole point of a website. If you're serious about selling online, your website should be designed around building a list. So why not put your email every day or however often you're mailing on your blog or your website? It gives people a demonstration of what they're going to get. And they like that. If they like what you're writing, they're very likely to subscribe.
Well, let's talk about building the list. I think it's another hang-up that a lot of people have. I mean, us men have this issue with envy. And I think some people just think, email is not going to work for me if I don't have a list with 50,000 names on it. And I think if your list has 100 names on it, but there are people who want to hear from you and honestly want to hear from you frequently, that doesn't matter how small your list is. If it's a list built of, I mean, you want to be growing it obviously over time, but is there any direct correlation to success with email with how big the list is?
No, not at all. In fact, I have a relatively small list and I'm working on growing it, but the fact is I'm going to be doing some solo ads and some other aggressive list building soon, but I know that most of the people who come from those websites and ads are probably not going to stick around long term because not everybody is that into it. Size has nothing to do with it. It's, if you have 10 people on your list, you should be mailing it regularly because I guarantee you that if you take those emails and you put them on a website every day, you're going to attract search engines and other people who are interested in what you have to say, and it'll grow. It'll grow on its own. Will you get unsubscribes on it? Yes. But, you know, I've made the argument in the case that unsubscribes are good. I like unsubscribes. I don't want people on my list who don't want to be there. And I don't see why anybody else would anyway, because they're just, you're going to get to a certain point if you're really good at list building where your autoresponder company is going to charge you more money when you get to a certain number of people on your list anyway. So why not clean it out of the non-buyers or people who are just not interested or not ever going to buy? And by the way, there's a difference between someone who's never going to buy but who's just putting it off. The people who are putting it off are the people that you want to keep on because eventually you'll get them. Eventually, well, they'll stop procrastinating.
Right, right. Well, I use MailChimp. And as you probably know, MailChimp rates each member of your list. And I guess there's an algorithm in how they do that. But I'll make the point that anybody who ever unsubscribes from my list has a low rating, which I'm guessing means they don't open the emails very often. They don't really do much with it, and so just to ultimately make the decision to just say, "Oh, this isn't worth my time." I've never had a 5-star member of my list unsubscribe.
That's interesting. You know what? I did not know that about MailChimp. That is very interesting to know that. That actually makes my point better than I could.
I'm tired then of the people who say, oh, hey, you know, they stroke themselves and say, hey, we have 50,000 names on our list, but gosh dog it, our open rate is so darn low. Yeah. Don't you understand the correlation there? I want to shift and dive into a different direction here. A lot of the people that read my blog and listen to this podcast and frankly who are customers of mine are larger organizations that have a very traditional sales force. So they have a VP of sales and then there's a sales manager. And they'll have a sales force that can number anywhere from 5 individuals to 25. And think of it as a very traditional sales force kind of model where they're forced into using a CRM system and they have numbers they have to meet at the end of the month and the sales manager is always pushing and shoving and trying to get them to do some things at the end of the month, trying to generate some activity. And these sales guys really struggle. They really, for me, it'd be a miserable existence to have to do business and live life that way. I just wanted to throw it up for conversation and how an individual sales guy, so he's part of this large organization that ostensibly has a sales and marketing campaign that he could conceivably tap into. But I, I've always believed, yeah, don't just rely on the generic boring corporate blog or the generic boring corporate mailing list that may exist. What do you think? I think an individual sales guy, even if he's part of a larger organization, and I hope the organization empowers them to do something like this, but they ought to do their own blog. They ought to have their own email campaign. They ought to be building their own email list with their prospects. What do you think?
I'm in complete agreement because people are not buying from that company in most cases. They're buying from a person. I brought up that car example before because the person who was on my mind when I was thinking of that was the sales genius, and there's no other way to describe this guy, Joe Girard, who just, I mean, he outsold everybody every year, all the time in cars. I mean, the guy was amazing. And I have this book called Top 10 or 10 Greatest Salespersons, I think it's called. It's kind of an older book. And there's this interview in there with him. And all you have to do is read that interview, and you realize why everyone bought from him. They weren't buying a car from whatever dealership he was in. They were buying the car because it was him, because he was taking care of that person. He was so personable and just so likable and would just go out of his way to make sure the experience was pleasant for people, that they would not only buy, but they would come back, you know, 4 or 5 years later and buy again automatically. They weren't going to go to anybody else. And I don't even think it mattered what the price was. They wanted to buy from him. And I'll give you another car example, and this applies to a lot of things. A few years ago, I talked to this guy named Doug Deanna, who's like one of the top direct mail copywriters on the planet. I mean, the guy's just amazing at what he does. And I remember him telling me, we were talking about this sort of topic, and he was like, you know, I'm going out to buy a car today. He goes, but you know what? I'm not shopping for a car. I'm shopping for a salesman. And, you know, people are like that subconsciously. They're not, you know, that's why they want to be left alone when they're out there looking for a car, or they're in a store and they don't want to talk to the salesperson, because most salespeople suck at what they do. But if you have someone that's good at what they do, and is giving them interesting information, and is personable, and is using their personality, and isn't just toying, you know, reading off a script and all that, it's a much better experience. And that's what people want, is a good buying experience. People like to buy. In America especially, people love to buy. I mean, that's what drives this economy, is consumerism. So all you got to do is tap into that.
Well, we've all experienced where you walk into a dealer or you walk into a furniture store and you can see the swarm of salespeople start moving towards you because they want to get – and it's just – you hate that. I mean, I detest that. In fact, it's why I shop for cars and furniture as infrequently as I can. But the point you're making is if you have built a relationship with someone over email – And that may have taken years to do that. You don't buy cars very often, but there's nothing saying you can't build a relationship with a buyer over the length of, if they buy a car in 2000, they don't buy another one until 2010, so what? Email them every day and help them experience a better relationship with their car and have it serviced and maintenance so that it lasts long and it's good and all that. They don't spend a lot of money on repairs. But when that time comes, they're going to go right to that guy.
I mean, and not only that, but that's the one sale. But what happens when that guy who had such a good experience has a friend or a family member who's looking for a car? I mean, they're going to send them to that salesperson. They're going to say, don't even go to these other places. Talk to my boy over there at, you know, the Dodge dealer or whatever.
Right.
And he's going to get – that salesman is going to get so many referrals. You know, it doesn't matter if the guy keeps his car for 20 years. He's going to get so many referrals. That's what Joe Girard did. I mean, right. He just had people coming to him. He didn't. I doubt he ever cold called because people were coming to him.
Right, right. What do you do? I mean, I don't know if there's an answer to this question. I'm not necessarily asking you, but if you're part of a sales organization and they don't let you build your own list, I'd almost say get another job. I mean, because you just can't rely on what a corporate marketing department's going to do. I mean, maybe they put out some helpful content here and there that you can tap into, but I almost think you go home after hours and create your own little sub, you know, your own little list on MailChimp or AWeber or whatever service works for you. And I'd still do it on my own because I think that's the best way to do it because it's more personal. As you said, they're not buying from Acme. You're buying from John Smith.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of power in just If you want to try to remain anonymous, and there's a lot of reasons to do this, even if your marketing department doesn't frown on it, you become more of a partial, non-partial person this way, is you can give generic information, not even mention the company you work for, and just do your own thing. Like, it's just like you're the expert on this XYZ product or topic, actually, not product, but topic. And then you're going to attract people who have the problem that product solves. And they're going to ask you, well, where can I get a solution to this? And you say, well, you can give me a call. And so it doesn't really matter if your marketing department frowns on it or not. They'll probably never know anyway.
Well, that's probably true. And I hope that we're moving to the age where that kind of thing isn't frowned upon. But you know as well as I do, there's a lot of corporate rules and dictates out there that are still mind-bogglingly stupid. I got an email from a guy, probably a month ago, and it was an interesting question. He was one of these traditional kind of sales guys, and it was near the end of the. I'm not sure if it was the month or the quarter, but his sales manager sent out an email to the team saying, "All right, by the end of the day, I want you to set up 10 people to sign up and take our demo." And I don't know the details of the demo, whether it was a 2-minute video or a 2-hour video. Who the heck knows of some of this stuff? But I gave him some answers that I think were helpful, but I wanted to see how you would have responded to that question with using email as a strategy.
He had to have like 10 of his products or demos sold by the end of the day, and how would email help with that?
Not have the products sold, but get 10 people to agree to do the demo.
Oh, well, you know what? If you have a list of people who have that problem for... I mean, this is all kind of hard to talk about because it's all like vague.
Right.
But there's ways to bribe people into taking actions like that, especially if they don't have to spend any money on anything. This is where creating your own little products and perceived value type things can really work. I mean, you could bribe someone into taking that demo. Look, I'll give you a free copy of this book that I wrote on XYZ problem that they have. It sells on Amazon for, $20, but I'll give it to you for free or something. I mean, if that's all you're trying to do is get someone to do a demo because there's some lame quota like that, I mean, why not? Why not just bribe people in?
Well, that's a great point. Giving something of value is a great way to get something in return, no doubt. I think the point that the gentleman was making was that he didn't have 10 people to reach out to even ask to take the demo. My guess was that his frustration was, I got to find 10 people to do this. And I think the point that you've been making with this long-term process of building this list and communicating on a regular basis and becoming a trusted advisor and a trusted resource, when that stupid dictate comes down from your sales manager saying, I need X number of things done by 5 o'clock, get to it. Never mind that human beings just like to operate that way. But if you have an intimate relationship with a mailing list, boy, that problem probably becomes pretty easy to solve.
Oh, that's push button easy. I mean, all you got to do is find out what they want and what they're willing to do in exchange for doing a favor for you. And believe me, you'll probably get more than what you need. Yeah. I mean, especially if you have a big enough list of people who like you.
Yeah. Another issue. Interesting challenge that a traditional sales guy has to do. So he's got this big database full of these accounts and these prospects in his CRM. And, the notion of, it takes X number of touches before a client will buy and all that. And we could debate the merits of that. But obviously one strategy that a lot of salespeople do to keep on the radar of their prospects, to touch base on a regular basis, and however you define regular basis, whether it's weekly, monthly, quarterly, depending on what you're selling, I suppose. Do you have any, obviously email is a way to touch someone and say, hey, Jim, just following up on our conversation of insert date here. Just wanted to see if you had any questions and if there's anything I can do. What you're really saying is, are you ready to buy yet? And what can I do? I think a lot of salespeople do that. Do you have any advice on how to shift that strategy into a more structured, strategized program with email?
I do. And I'm going to talk about something that might sound a bit strange. I'm going to be writing about this in my newsletter pretty soon, actually. This is so off the wall. I think you're going to like this, actually. You said you wanted to push some buttons. There's this movie from the year 2000 called The Tao of Steve. And it's about this guy who, this like overweight guy who's got like nothing going for him physically, but he gets women just love him. They fall over themselves for him. And he's like teaching this other guy how he does it. And he's got this, what he calls rule of being Steve. And basically it's this, it's three parts. It's first you be desireless, then you be excellent, and then you be gone. And this is his formula. So let's break this down for selling. A lot of these sales guys, and believe me, this is probably why I sucked at MLM so bad, is we go in showing our desires. We want them to buy. I mean, and it telegraphs off us, and it's so obvious, and it repulses people. They want to get away from us. Even if they want what we have to sell, they don't want anything to do with it when we come out broadcasting that we need them and everything. So I would say do the first part of that. Be desireless. Just have something interesting to say that's going to make it worth their time to hear from you. It can be a tip. It can be just talking about the problem, because people love to hear other people talk about the same problem they have. It could be anything like that. Then you want to do something excellent, and that's where you kind of show and demonstrate your expertise in whatever it is you're selling. Could be talking about the product at that point. That's fine. And then you want to kind of take it away. You know, you want to put a deadline on it. You know, talk about how certain people can't buy and they're not qualified to buy, which is true anyway. I mean, that's true for almost any product. There are certain people who are not qualified to buy. You know, if you're not going to use this product, don't do it. If you're going to go into debt over it, you know, and you're not going to be able to get out of your debt, don't do it. You know, you take it away. You leave. And people, and this is from the movie, people pursue that which retreats. So that's a very off-the-wall, strange analogy probably, but it's so true, and this is especially true in selling anything else.
I think that's a fascinating way to kind of think about it strategically, and it takes away this notion where you send your weekly email saying, which says the same thing every week, which you're telegraphing, you're obviously telegraphing what you're trying to, what you want from this prospect. That's an interesting way to do it. Is there a way to, I mean, how do you think a sales rep could use an autoresponder program? Did you see any value to that? I mean, could you concurrently run that kind of the Tao of Steve strategy you just talked about, and then on the side have an autoresponder campaign going that just drops information? I mean, what do you think of that idea, or is it good, bad?
Well, I think every email should have that formula contained within it. So I think it's a good idea. I think the email should be struck. And I've been doing this for a long time before I even was aware of that movie. I was watching it and I'm like, holy crap, this is what email is. Every email that I write, for the most part, unless there's a special offer going on or something, follows this exact same thing. And it's just selling, except you're selling in an email and not in person. You don't come in broadcasting, buy this, you know, in the first paragraph. No, you start out with something interesting and that maybe even has nothing to do with your product. In fact, 99% of the time, my emails have nothing to do with my product, the first half of it. It's just talking about whatever. And then I try to do something that demonstrates my credibility or my expertise or something. And I'm still not really selling anything. I'm just demonstrating why I'm so cool, so to speak, and you know why they should listen to me. And this is all just part of writing. I mean, it's not like you have to even consciously do this. This is just a natural flow of things. And then at the end, plug something. And I think an autoresponder is a great way to do it. If you get a little funnel going like that, you will be an order taker. You won't be a salesperson at that point, because you're only going to hear from people who want to buy.
Yeah, well, a really key thing you said in our last interview was just write emails as if you're writing to a friend.
Yes.
And it's really all you got to do. And people overcomplicate it. They overthink it. They think they have to win a Pulitzer and all that. And it's just it write a simple email to a friend. Well, Ben, I was hoping to talk for 20 minutes and we've gone 30. So I think that's probably a good wrap. We'll have to probably reconvene down the road a bit and continue our dialogue. Thank you again for making some time. Before I let you go, how can people get in touch with you, learn about your work, and I want to do a quick plug. Your daily email is actually an outstanding email, and I recommend it to the audience. So how can people get in touch with you and get all that information?
Well, they could just go to www.bensettle.com, and if you opt into the form there, you will get the first issue of my email players newsletter in a PDF format. It's a print newsletter, but obviously I deliver it by email PDF, and that'll give you 24 ways to almost instantly the same day start making more money with your emails if you just apply what's in it. And you know, that's a $97 newsletter, so that's real value. Or you can just go and check out the blog at that same site, and just, I have over 700 articles there last I counted, so there's plenty of content there just to dig your teeth into and see what's going on.
Outstanding. Ben Settle, an email specialist out of bensettle.com. It was great to talk to you again. Thanks again for making the time.
Well, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
It was my pleasure. All right. Well, on behalf of today's guest, Ben Settle, I'm Todd Schnick. We'll see you next time on Intrepid Radio.